And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom and welcome to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network, thelandofisrael.com. This is Ari Abramowitz here with my best buddy, Jeremy Gimpel. Jeremy, we've been gone for a while. I hope we're not rusty. We're definitely not rusty when it comes to being fierce Jewish fighting soldiers of Israel because, we had a good week there of training. They call us up every now and then for training. Most of the time it's actually for some active service, but they called us up and gave us some grueling training. I mean, and since I was in Golani, I don't remember being subject to that sort of intensity.
No? I guess it was nice to be thrust into such an intense training just to know that we were able to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the first few days, it was normal. We were running up and down mountains, shooting a lot, and, just practicing conquering mountains and doing the war thing. And then the second to last day, they were like, okay, we did the full day of, you know, it starts off where it's just our unit, our class, our unit, our battalion, our platoon. It goes bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they said, okay, this day we train the entire day. And then they said, we're going to do a march. So we did a long march, I don't know, 3-4 hours. And then we did Lashab, where we conquered these like urban combat. We were learning that. And we were drenched from sweat, freezing cold, shivering. We were done.
It was 26 hours from the time we started all the way through the night till the next morning.
We were just completely finished. And they said, okay, now we're going to march the rest of the night. And then they marched us the rest of the night. I have bloody, pussy blisters on the bottom of my feet. And then when we got back and we were just totally gone, they said, now we're going to do the battalion platoon, I don't know the English word for it, but the entire battalion company exercise with helicopters and tanks, and we're running up mountains where I wasn't able to walk and they had us running. So really, on the one hand, it was a little rough, it was a little much, but on the other hand, at least they're taking it seriously. You know, at least they're actually saying, you guys are going to have to fight a war. That's why you're here. This isn't just a fun thing to get together with old buddies and friends. There's going to be a war, and you need to be able to fight it. And so that was, you know, refreshing to see that they're taking it seriously, and it was important, I think, for us too.
Well, I think with all that's going on around in the world, we better be taking war seriously. It seems like things are heating up. Like every night of the Hanukkah candle that we're lighting, it's like getting more and more hot in the house. Like the whole world is being shaken up right now.
Yeah, and I've had to ask myself as we're walking in to do this show together, where do we begin? I mean, it's been, we missed the show last week. We were in reserve duty and we were going to do it from reserve duty. We brought the equipment with us.
It was just but not
we
possible. Were not,
it was not possible. I thought I was going to have access to the car. No. So I didn't even have a change of underwear for a full week. I didn't take my socks off. I mean, it was really, really brutal and rough. So now we're back. And we're back from training for war, and I feel like we come back and all of a sudden the first shot has been fired. That's what I see this United Nations resolution against. That's what we got to talk about, Jeremy. That's the elephant in the room here. That is the biggest deal right now. Because, you know, before a war starts, it's usually not out of nowhere. There's a Cold War that happens first, and there's rhetoric and there's negativity, but it's just a bunch of words. So I think that up until now, even the United Nations, when they said there's no connection between Jews and the Temple Mount, and by extension, the Western Wall and all of Jerusalem.
And then really all of Israel.
Right, and all of Israel. So that was one attack. But for the entire United Nations Security Council to come together and America to not only not veto it, but to really initiate it
to
and
orchestrate
push it forward. Orchestrate it. And then one of the most powerful, poignant parts of the entire thing that really highlighted it was the standing ovation of applause that happened throughout the United Nations. They don't do that. That's not what they do.
It's not like they passed a resolution.
It was just they couldn't contain themselves. They were so happy and filled with joy. The entire United Nations. This is a special thing. This isn't just nothing that's going on here.
Well, not only that, people have to keep in mind that this upcoming year is the 50th year to the reunification of Jerusalem. Well, it's not happenstance or coincidence that the United Nations are all now gathering and applauding themselves and cheering themselves on as they come against Jerusalem.
Right. And why are they so happy? I think because this resolution, this attack was such a if you're a hater of Israel and the Jewish people, this is the best strategy to do it. It on so many different fronts, they were successful in launching the first attack, because this wasn't, you know, first a warning shot. This wasn't a fire shot at our leg. This was at the heart of Israel. This is the beating heart of Israel, Judea. What is a Jew without Judea?
Wait, let me tell you, I heard two things. One was from Alan Dershowitz, who said, you know, Obama called me into his office before his election. He said he wanted my support. He said he would always have Israel's back. I just didn't think that he meant with a knife in their back.
Right.
And then John Bolton comes out and says, Obama didn't stab them in the back. He stabbed them in the front.
Yeah, he stabbed them in the front. You got to give it to him, you know, like at least that. At least it was looking at us in the eye when he did it. And this is just the beginning. We haven't heard the end of Obama, but so many people are, you know, focusing on Obama stabbing us in the back. And the truth is that this was an international assault attack fired at Israel's heart. And why? Number one, legitimacy. Because if we don't have a right to Judea, we don't have a right to any of Israel. Is that just the obvious truth?
Of course.
Because if what is our right to Hebron? That's what these leftists in Tel Aviv, these leftist Jews in America don't understand. That if we don't have a right to Judea and Samaria, then we don't have a right to Tel Aviv, their homes, their apartments. What does that mean for their real estate values? They're so delusional. You really have to be compassionate to them. This leftism in the world today is a true pathology that we have to, you know, see the evil for what it is, but at the same time, be compassionate for these ill people, these Jews that are literally tying their own nooses, thinking that if they are side with the international community against their own nation, somehow they'll be exempt from the fallout and the negative consequences that are in store for the Jewish people. You can't just run away from your Judaism like that. So it was an attack on our legitimacy, but also, at the very core, it's an attack on our national security. Not, you know, an American hears national security, and there's a certain abstraction to that. You know, okay, our national security, it doesn't mean existential. It doesn't mean America itself is at. It means that, you know, there may be an attack here and there. The story I love to tell, Ariel Sharon and Bush are in a helicopter, and Bush says, Ariel Sharon says, the 9 miles wide, without Judea and Samaria, without the West Bank, Israel's 9 miles wide. Bush says, 9 miles wide, we got driveways longer than that in Texas. Because it is undefensible. You cannot defend a country. That's why we need to be called up at a moment's notice. Because a country that's already as wide as ours is now, without Judea and Samaria, slice and dice. You saw what happened to Gaza. Gaza, you know, they said, oh, we transferred out every single Jew, and now there's missiles that were landing on Ashkelon, Ashdod, Tel Aviv, throughout the entire country. There's no question that this would be an actual military strategic launching pad to fire missiles at Ben-Gurion Airport and destroy the rest of the country. So it's on a national security level, but not only on a national security level. This was an international license to murder Jews. Not that our cousins need some sort of international license. They're just fine doing it without international approval. But it just bolsters and strengthens them. That says, yes, this is your land. It was occupied. It was stolen from you. And it gives credibility, legitimacy to attacks and murdering Jews. You know, just the other day, I was with Yaniv Gabay, our good friend, and driving on the road, and a car coming towards us just moments before had a brick slammed through the windshield. And Yaniv, like, he was an elite soldier. He immediately took out his gun and had it cocked ready to go within a moment. And because what if we get a rock thrown at us? These aren't just rocks. These are weapons to murder, to kill. There have been so many Jews who have been murdered, maimed for life. To me, I don't care what the protocol is. If someone is throwing a brick at my car, I am shooting them dead. period, end of story. And we're going to have a lot more of that after this attack. But also, you know, one of the...
I just hear the fodder in the background saying legitimacy to kill Jews, as if these jihadists are looking for any reason. They have enough reason. They're already infused with Islamic hate and jihadist ideology. But what this does do, it's not necessarily, it's encouraging them.
It's an act of encouragement.
It's
encouraging them. Yes, it's encouraging them. They are now officially, internationally recognized as the occupied victim underdogs.
It's like fanning the flames
of
the
saying,
hate.
You want to be Che Guevara and have a t-shirt made after you? Go kill a Jew. That's what this thing is.
Wow.
That's what this thing is. And not only that, there's also unity of the Jewish people. And that's what I really want to talk about for a moment here. And I want to hear your thoughts on that, because that is our Achilles heel. It's one of our weakest points. When we are not united, when we're turned against each other, it truly does weaken us. Right? Remember what Balaam did when he wanted to truly weaken the Jewish people? Get them to sin against God and get them to turn against each other. And that is the way to do it. And that's what this is, because it's the international community saying, no, no, Israelis in Tel Aviv, this isn't about you, or American Jews. This is about the settlers. This is about the settlers. And then it gets the settlers to the rest of the leftist Jews that are terrified and trying to save their own skin. People are scared. People are scared right now, even in Jerusalem and in Israel. Someone who I really know and love, I went to the doctor because I got sick from our military training, Jeremy. And I go to the doctor and I see this guy sitting there. He says he's going to see the doctor to get some anti-anxiety medication, because ever since this United Nations declaration, he's having heart palpitations. He can't sleep at night. People are truly scared. I'm not scared. I think a lot of Jews in Israel and Jerusalem are not scared. But subconsciously, when this happens, I think Jews around the world, they are afraid. And what? They're reacting in all sorts of crazy ways, because we're a united people. To attack the settlers and to say, okay, Jews around the world, you can side with us. You can be a good Jew, but just turn against the settlements and the settlers, like J Street, who came out and applauded the Obama administration. I go to Google News. I've been going to Google News a lot lately, because they have it segmented into different, you know, into Israel news, American news. And it's not just the places I go to. They have a lot of Al Jazeera and Haaretz. And the Haaretz is always the top. And it says, America has just saved Israel from themselves. And there's also I don't know whether they are delusional or whether they are opportunist politicians here in Israel, like Lapid and Barak and Ya'alon and these voices that are blaming Bibi Netanyahu and saying the reason that America and the UN has turned against Israel and declared this is because of us.
You know,
our skirt is too short.
You know what's so sick about it? It's totally opportunistic. They're just looking for a chance at winning some points on Netanyahu's back without any thought about the war that the nations are waging on
all of us.
It's like unbelievable.
I would like to believe and give them the credit that it is opportunistic, but I think there's also a mix of other things. And one of those is just this, you know, Tzipi Livni was like the sweetheart of the last elections, and Obama was like endorsing her and everyone loved her. And it must feel so good to have the international community say, that woman, she's really great. And she could read European headlines about how she's so wonderful. All she has to do is sell her own people short and put her own nation in jeopardy, but she gets to be the beloved of the world. You know, and I think there's a certain feeling, a part of that that is deep with it, because we want to be brothers.
Well, let me ask
the
question, why are you not scared? Everyone, you're saying everyone, like, I don't sense that anyone is scared.
Okay, so
I'm just saying from my own personal, like, I'm looking around. And
well, you do live in Judea, okay?
If there would be a person that should be nervous about the settlements, it would be the people that may be uprooted. No one here
I'll
seems
tell you
to
why
be
I'm
batting
not scared. I'll tell you why I'm not scared. Because fear and hatred are brother emotions. And they come from the belief that there is a threat that is being posed. And I don't believe that Obama or the EU or the UN or anyone else poses any real threat. I think this is all orchestrated by God for our own opportunity to have growth, and there's tremendous opportunity all over the place here right now. We could focus on all the downsides and how they're stabbing us in the back, or say, what is this really about? What is the underlying message that Hashem is sending us, the opportunities that we're confronted with? Because there's fundamental questions we as a nation need to answer for ourselves. There's idols that we have that we need to say, is this a truth, or is this an idol that we've built for ourselves? I'm not afraid, because what, all of a sudden now, after thousands of years where the greatest empires crumble before our eyes, and we're not only alive, but we're thriving and we're flourishing and we're doing so well. And now I'm going to be afraid something's going to happen to us. God is in charge. And that's why I'm not scared. And that's also why you're not scared. And that's why in Judea, we're not scared either. That's the underlying truth. But I just want to say what the last attack is. Is that all right?
Yeah.
So this is like the most fundamental. This is saying that Judea and Samaria doesn't belong to Israel is at the foundational core, not only attack on Israel as a whole, and it's not only to divide our people and to destroy the country on a military level, but it's an attack on Hashem. It's an attack on God in the world. Is there a God in the world? Because here's the thing, at a very basic level, here's Israel, a country that is surrounded by genocide that's happening in Syria. Millions of people are being slaughtered. There is authoritarian, totalitarian dictators all around us that are torturing and murdering and religious coercion and horrific crimes against humanity. And we're this light. But at the same time, the condemnations, there's been more condemnations against Israel than all of the other countries in the world combined. And here's the thing. Are we bad or not? Are we good? Well, if the world says that we're bad, if there is no ultimate truth, absolute truth, if there is no God, then if the world says something, then that's what the truth is. And when the world gets to say Israel, Judea and Samaria doesn't belong to the Jewish people, doesn't belong to Israel, they are undermining the very premise and concept of a divine creator, a divine truth, which is why you see God-fearing people in America that are coming out and standing with Israel and defending with Israel, because this is an attack on everybody. This is an attack on liberty. This is an attack on freedom. This is an attack on the very foundational core that the Torah, the Bible, has brought to the world. So that's, you know, this is as expansive and foundational as it gets.
Why is it an attack on God? Let's talk about that a little bit more.
Okay.
I want you to explain that.
Okay.
A UN resolution, and then John Kerry comes out and starts continuing, like, you know, it's like another like punch in the face. Why is that attacking God?
Okay, so first of all, the attack, I explained why attacks on, and all these attacks and condemnations against Israel versus the rest of the world is an attack on God. You're with me so far there,
right? Because it's just irrational.
It's totally irrational. It's also false. It's false. The entire premise with which they're attacking us is false. There's falsehood there. But if they're saying the whole world is going to condemn it, the whole world is condemning Israel, and that is the new truth. An attack on truth, as the Jewish people, we believe God's seal is truth. When you undermine the very premise of truth and say it doesn't matter where there's an absolute truth, where there's any justice, what truth and justice is what I say and what the rest of the world says, and we're going to build our tower that goes so high, and we're going to be the ones that determine for ourselves. This is an assertion of man over truth.
Wow, that's really beautiful.
Is that
well? Because okay. The way that I always saw it as an attack on God, first of all, that is so profound and meaningful and awesome, and I appreciate you articulating that. When I see the United Nations in their arrogant attack on the Bible, that's the way I see it. Meaning there's a 4,000-year-old history, and it's recorded so articulately and so beautifully in the Tanakh, and all of the archaeological discoveries in the city of David confirm the reality that the Tanakh exposes as true. And when these United Nations come up, what they're doing is they're denying the legitimacy of the Bible. And I don't know, if I had a speech at the United Nations, and that, of course, is the reason why it's an attack on God, but if I had a speech that I could give at the United Nations, I would want to say something along the lines of, you know, here I hold this book, the Word of God transmitted by the prophets of Israel. And it talks about a time that the Jewish people would return to the land of Israel. And here we are fulfilling that. And you're denying the Bible's authenticity or truth. I want you to know that In my Bible, it says that as well, that the United Nations would come together and attack Israel in their gleeful cheering. And here they are now gathering together, clapping their hands and cheering themselves on, just as the Tanakh predicted would happen. It's like so remarkable. A people so small would return to a land really in the middle of nowhere, a barren land in the middle of the Middle East. Why would the nations at all pay any attention to it? The audacity of Zechariah to write that this would happen. And here we're seeing the United Nations celebrating together in their attempt to come against us. And the reason why I don't fear is because I know the end of the book. Israel is going to prevail in such a marvelous way, ultimately, because it's not really for our sake. It's really for God's sake, meaning God's name is at stake here, because they, the world now, is coming together in an a united front against God's truth, against God's word, against God's people, against God's land. Like, it's like the forces of the secular have all come together in this final war, and we know that Israel prevails. And also, you said there was a whole world of opportunity here, what we could do. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, I do want to talk about that. But in order to really identify that opportunity, what they are, for me, the way my process is intellectually, psychologically, emotionally, I have to first just put my ear out and say, Hashem, why is this happening to us in this way? It doesn't mean that we need to say, hey, are our sisters and daughters' dresses too short? We're not modest enough. We need to say more psalms. Why are you causing this to happen to us in this way at this time? And I think, you know, when we look at the Iranian deal, when that was going on, when did that actually happen? Purim. Purim was exactly when Obama went to Persia and Ahasuerus and Haman came together. I mean, it was so obvious. An allusion and a message to us that what happened in the days of Purim are happening in our times. And it's hard to not see the connection between that, what's happening now in the world, and Hanukkah. Because what is this an attack on? This is an attack on Judea. On Judea. And what does Judea represent? It's always represented when you look back at the Torah, the book of Judges, that the kingdom split after King Solomon's son Rehoboam made a strategic error by listening to his friends instead of the sages. And then it split into Judea and Israel, and the tribes of Israel in the north became idolatrous. And there was always this theme of leftism and Hellenism and shirking of your own Jewish identity to adopt the identity of the nations of the world. And that's obviously why this is happening right now. This is happening because what is our fundamental identity? Are we Jews that are connected to Judea? Or are we like the Hellenists in the time of Hanukkah, and we're going to embrace those that are persecuting us and blame these extremist right-wing settler Jews that for all the persecution that's happening? You know, and I think what is really missing on a foundational level, before I get to, you know, why this is happening to Judea, because clearly there's a message that needs to come out of Judea right now. Judea is under an attack. So the microphone is up to the mouth of Judea. What are we saying? What is our response? That is like a question that we need to ask. And it's hard for me to realize, but we need to look at ourselves, Jeremy, and realize we're building this headquarters in the middle of Judea. And when you look at Judea, it's all these caravans. And then there's this beautiful, strong granite. It's like a castle that we're building there in a hilltop in Judea.
A fortress.
And the way I see it is that what we need to do is rise to the occasion and be the voice of Judea. Now, please God, many others should do it also, but we need to speak up. But what's really missing on a foundational level, before I get into a little bit more details, I want to say can be best exemplified by what sparked the entire Hanukkah story. Now, there's a lot of different approaches to how this happened, but I don't know if our listeners out there have heard of the story of Chana. Who was Chana? She was the daughter of a Kohen, Matityahu, the head Maccabee, and she was set to get married that evening. And what happened in those times as a further way of subjugating and psychologically, spiritually defeating the Jewish people, there was Prima Nocta, which said that the Greek officers slept with the Jewish bride on her wedding night. That's what happened. So Chana was set to get married that night, and she went to the middle of the town square in front of all of the priests and all of the city, and it even says in front of her mother-in-law, and she dropped her dress. She stood there nude in front of all of them, in front of the priests and these religious priests, and they were shocked, and she said, "What? You're so shocked right now? You're so concerned and upset and flurried and consternated by me standing here naked? No actual sin is happening now. But tonight, as I'm raped by a Greek, that's not bothering you. That's okay with you, but me standing here right now isn't." And that was enough to kindle the righteous indignation of the Maccabees. And that's what I think is missing right now. Righteous indignation. And it was good because I feel like I got little tastes of it with Bibi when, you know, the world came against Israel and condemned. And he's like, okay, Ukraine, we're going to take you to task. And Argentina, we're going to take you to task. And Bennett is like, we're going to annex Judea and Samaria. And it wasn't the normal folding that you usually see by Israeli leaders. And I think American Jews were really shaken by that. What are they doing? How are they standing up to America? How are they alienating America? And there was a certain sense of that. But at a certain point, we just need to say, who are you to say such a Judea doesn't belong to the Jews? You know what? Thank you for inspiring me. I'm sorry, God, that it took this to really kindle my heart and inspire me. But now Judea is officially annexed and part of Israel. That's it. Done. And for those people that say, well, I want you to listen to this. Listen to this little brief exchange between John Kerry and Bibi Netanyahu.
But here is a fundamental reality. If the choice is one state, Israel can either be Jewish or democratic. It cannot be both. And it won't ever really be at peace.
Israelis do not need to be lectured about the importance of peace by foreign leaders. Israel's hand has been extended in peace to its neighbors from day one, from its very first day. We've prayed for peace. We've worked for it every day since then. And thousands of Israeli families have made the ultimate sacrifice to defend our country and advance peace.
Can I tell you who I agree with there? I agree with John Kerry. When John Kerry said, Israel has to decide, is it going to be a Jewish state or a democracy? It has to go one way or the other. And I think in his mind, in Obama's mind, they're thinking, oh, this is the normal Jewish people that we always know, American Jews, and they're just going to fold. But if he thought that the answer of Israel would be, okay, done. We're a Jewish state before we're a democracy, first and foremost. And thank you for this inspiration. We're going to annex Judea and Samaria. And then what would happen? They would say, listen, okay, so it's a democracy, you annex that, you're going to have a serious demographic problem on your hands. I happen to think that we wouldn't, but let's say they would. Let's say that we would, and they're right. Because what does that mean? If we annex Judea and Samaria, it means all of these Muslim Arabs are now full voting citizens
of
Israel?
That is just not true.
Wait.
Who says that annexation comes with full voting rights?
Well, that's where I'm going with this. Because where it comes with full voting rights? According to the hardcore rules of democracy?
No, there can be a process of, as long as they're in the process of signing a declaration of loyalty to the Israel as a Jewish democratic state, there has to be some sort of acceptance of the rule of law,
right,
before just they're just
like
all given.
Just like in America, there is
them,
a process.
Absolutely. And most of them will take Toshavut like they do in East Jerusalem and not really even want voting rights because they don't live on a national level with national aspirations. They really don't. They live very much in their own villages and their own communities while they have municipal elections and live their own lives.
Yeah, so what you're saying is true, but let me tell you what would happen if we annexed Judea and Samaria.
Okay.
The whole world would say apartheid. And we would say, but exactly what you said.
But they're already saying apartheid.
Exactly. But they would be coming down with even more zeal and saying, but let me just say exactly what you said. They would be coming down saying apartheid. And it doesn't matter what we would say, how much sense we would make. That's what the world will come down on us. Why? Because it's in our interest. It's in our strength, and they don't want a strong Israel. They don't care about the Palestinians. That's not what this is about. So the point is, though, that what is one of the main idols that needs to be shattered? That our foreign policy is determined, as King David said, Ma Yomru Hagoyim. What are the nations going to say? We're so consumed with what the nations are going to say. And why? Because there's this underlying belief that so many have that we're only here, we only exist at the mercy of the nations because the international community allows us to. And if we do things to inflame them, then they're not going to allow us to exist. So we need to be so consumed with what the world is saying. And we need to let that go. So it doesn't matter whether there's legitimacy to their claims or not. What matters is, are we following our own moral code? And if people say, because also just one point, let's say we annexed Judea and Samaria and we didn't give them citizenship. And we say, no, this is Israel is a democracy of Jews. Then they could really say apartheid, but that's ridiculous because apartheid, if you're black, you can't become white. But if you're saying it's a democracy of Jews, any Arab, any Christian, anyone can become a Jew. This isn't about race. That's what apartheid is. It's about race. This is about religious national identity, and that is about ideas. And we're saying that these Muslim Arabs are... We don't share the foundational premise of values that they do. America isn't even a democracy. America is not a democracy. It's a republic. A democracy, 51% can vote to kill 49%. That's a pure, raw democracy. A republic is a democracy tempered by the rule of law and these principles of equality that override any democratic desire. So Israel... The premise that Israel would be an apartheid state needs to not be a factor that we're even taking into account. I feel like you have something you want to say right now.
Yeah, I have so much to say.
Okay, so I have more to say, but we can go on. Go on. I want to hear you.
Are you sure? Is it my turn?
It's not officially your turn yet, but I want to hear anything.
No, but I'm saying
say.
I'm enjoying. I'm learning a lot listening to you. I'm ready to wait my turn as soon as I get
righteous
my turn.
Indignation. Stop caring about what the world says and building up democracy like it's this idol that is in and of itself sacred. These are idols that we need to shatter. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, I think it's important to shatter idols during Hanukkah, but I'll tell you why, in my opinion, what Barack Obama and John Kerry and the United Nations have done for us has been the greatest Hanukkah gift. It's just been marvelous. When I hear that people are nervous or scared, I'm like, they're so, it's such a visceral response being scared of the nations. But really what's happened here is this looming fear that left-wing politicians have been peddling all over Israel, that the J Street organizations have been peddling, just be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. What will the nations do? The nations will come together and they'll pass a resolution against Israel. No, the Security Council, they're going to pass. And if the Security Council of the United Nations passes a resolution against Israel, we'll be isolated. We'll be alone. What will happen? And Israel's been walking around terrified of this. And now, in perfect timing, the United States orchestrates this resolution and exposes the bluff of the United Nations.
It's a boogeyman.
It's just a big, fat bluff. And they just exposed themselves. And Barack Obama is as impotent as the United Nations is. They have no power. They have no force. They're totally irrelevant to the real world. It's a bunch of bureaucrats that get together, talk about things, make resolutions, and that's it.
It's been a fear that we've had for so long, and it happened in, hey, what?
And that's it?
Anything?
It's over?
Nothing?
That's
yeah.
it? And then the marvelous opportunity that there's sometimes where I'm not happy with Bibi Netanyahu, and there are times where I'm just like,
so he's happy he's
a
that
shining
guy.
Pride yes. for the Jewish people.
I have been really grateful and happy that I voted for him. I was regretting it for a little bit here and there. When I saw him over the past few days, I don't care what his motivations are. I think it's a mixed bag of a lot of different things, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that he's actually a proud, strong voice, and he's asserting Israel's strength, and this is what will cause the world to respect us.
Well, listen,
they respect strength, not morality. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what happened, as soon as he came out in such like powerful, unapologetic terms, where he's like, oh, the prime minister of Ukraine is supposed to come to Israel? I'm sorry, you're not invited here anymore. He defunded the United Nations. He's like, that's it. We're out. You did this to us. And he like, instead of like cowering, he like stood up like, bring it on. And then immediately what happened? The world caved. The world caved. I mean, the United Kingdom just now came out condemning John Kerry in his speech against Israel. And he said that John Kerry is, quote, obsessively focused on one issue over the settlements. All the issues that are blaring in the Middle East, John Kerry's talking about the religious believers in the Judea and Samaria. That's like the obsessive reality. And the United Kingdom, it's rare for them to condemn like their ally, the United States. They came out condemning them. And then the White House came out with an official statement saying Obama will from now on veto any other UN resolution critical of Israel. And I'm like, really? If you've already come out all guns blaring, Barack Obama, why have you done it now? I mean, imagine John Kerry. He's been the Secretary of State now for 4 years. He's like, my vision for Israel is that there will be two states and a divided Jerusalem. And it's like, well, where have you been for the last 4 years? You're now saying this? Like, this is what, you're declaring your failure because you're about to leave in 2 weeks. Yeah. They've only, like, just made a mockery of themselves, made a mockery of the United Nations, exposed their idiocy to everyone, and the Jewish people are celebrating Hanukkah like there's no tomorrow. It's, like, the most marvelous Hanukkah gift because, like, there may have been something to fear, but now we see that there's literally nothing to fear. And then in comes President-elect Donald Trump. And let me
now
tell
this
you,
is where I think we're going to have a little bit of a disagreement. I want to hear what you have to say.
Listen to what he has to say.
The UN has such tremendous potential, not living up to its potential. There is such tremendous potential, but it is not living up. When do you see the United Nations solving problems? They don't. They cause problems. So if it lives up to the potential, it's a great thing. And if it doesn't, it's a waste of time and money.
Here's why I like Donald Trump. He's already elected. He's not just saying now what he needs to say to get elected. He's just telling the truth as he sees it. And you know how he sees it? He has a head on his shoulders that has not been corrupted by liberal stupidity. And he sees good, and he sees bad, and he sees Israel is good, and he sees all these other Muslim nations are bad, and the United Nations is condemning the good, and it's very simple for him. And he's now like going to shift the whole game for Israel. This is
he came against Egypt and said he got them to not. I mean, to talk about a real change. Egypt backed off because he got involved before he's even present. He says, "Israel, hold tight. I'm almost in."
Right. It's like, you know, stay strong.
It's wonderful,
Israel,
to hear.
It's so exciting. Now imagine all of the myopic Jewish people that voted for Hillary Clinton, folks. Imagine if Hillary Clinton were in office now. And who's the new head of the Democratic Party? The Muslim Farrakhan student? The student of Farrakhan, the Muslim guy?
Ellerson.
He's like a Jew hater. He's like, hi.
Keith Ellerson.
Keith Ellerson, here's my Jew hater card. He's like an official Jew
full
hater.
Full-fledged, outright.
Do you know what Israel would have to live under right now with another 8 years of Hillary Clinton after Obama and Kerry like throw up this alley-oop and it would just be slam dunked by Hillary Clinton? And now Donald Trump is saying, oh, yes, all of these people that are saying that, they don't represent me. They don't represent America. I am America. I am the president. And we're shifting the whole game.
Yeah. And you know what? I hear what he's saying. He understands people and psychology a lot more. He's saying Russia wants to have a nuclear standoff. We'll make more nukes than them. People are like, what? The president's talking about making nukes? He understands that he needs to have a little crazy in his eye. In the world we live in today, people respect strength and they fear crazy. And as I think he's holding on to the crazy card because he understands how important it is. And you know what? So far, I like the guy. I think that this, what he's done for Israel, isn't changing the tune of a lot of American Jews because, first and foremost, they see themselves and identify as liberal leftists before they are Jews. So they, I don't think this is going to change anything for them. My only concern is that we're going to take too much refuge in this and think that too much, and really, I think that anything can happen in the future. I'm not putting my hope and faith in Donald Trump, but at the same time, I'm happy for America.
Yeah.
I'm happy for America that they are now represented by someone who's standing with Israel because that bodes well for America's future as opposed to the reverse. But go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to point out because it's important to analyze sort of the events that are happening. So Obama orchestrates this thing, all guns blaring, automatic fire all over Israel, like just full-waged political warfare against Israel. He orchestrates the whole thing, Egypt, then the Ukraine, then they pass the resolution. All of the nations are applauding. Obama is running around. He's so excited. He's so happy. And then in comes John Kerry after this. And it's like, now we're bringing in the artillery. And they're shooting and they're shooting and they're shooting and they're shooting on Israel. And they're doing everything they can to try to hurt Israel politically in the last time that they have in office. And then Netanyahu and Naftali Bennett and they come out so strong, and they came out and they're like, bring it on. And then to see the immediate bowing down, like the immediately collapse of the evil tyrants of the Obama
administration.
Folding, that's the word. They just immediately folded, and then the White House came out with a statement saying, okay, from now on, Obama will veto any other UN resolutions that are critical of Israel. I mean, are you critical of Israel or not? He's like, oh, I am critical of Israel. Oh, no, Netanyahu is mad at me. Okay, we won't be critical anymore. It's like unbelievable to show that when Israel is strong, the world will respect us. It's like we're entering into a new era. And if I could only articulate what this meant for me, I was on my way to a trip with my kids. We took the day off. It's Hanukkah. The kids are off of school. I took them down to the Dead Sea to go on a hike. And on our way down to the Dead Sea, we stopped off at this healthy, you know, spelt pizza, you know, restaurant that Tahila makes us go to because she likes us to eat healthy. We pick up the pizza, and inside the pizza shop, the guy behind the counter says, he looks up to me and he says, I want you to know I wasn't always a religious man. And I said, really? Tell me more. And he said, you know, I used to just be like an Israeli like everyone else. But then as I get older and as I've, you know, been searching for more and more truth in my family and in my life, I just have become a more religious believing man. And he says, and I want you to know what I heard Netanyahu say today just almost brought me to tears. And I'm like, really, what did Netanyahu say today? I was so interested in what this guy had to say. Now, Netanyahu put out another press release to the people of Israel. And it was a totally different speech than he gave in English to the rest of the world. And in his speech to Israel, he quoted a letter that was written to him by a bereaved family. And in the end of the letter, it was a religious family. And he just quoted the last part. And at the last part of the letter, it says, and we have faith in the rock of Israel, our salvation and Savior God. And I was like, that's the first time I've ever heard Prime Minister Netanyahu ever talk about salvation, ever talk about God in an official address to the people of Israel.
And I love that, the rock of Israel, Sur Yisrael.
He never talks about God.
No, and, don't say it. He alludes, but in a very sort
but
of
this was
vanilla,
and even this time, he didn't say it coming from himself. He read it as a quote coming from someone else.
We gotcha.
Exactly. It's like what he's doing now, and it's like you can sense it in the air. Something is shifting in Israel. The 50th year of Jerusalem is coming up. The nations are cheering and gathering together. And Israel is already stepping up to the challenge in such an exciting and marvelous way.
Yeah. Can I just tell you, when we were in the Army and Reserve duty, Jeremy, you know, we're jokers. We're laughing. We're having a good time. But when it was that one freezing cold night, and we built a fire in the whole unit. It was all around this fire, and the ones that weren't were snuggled in their tents that were all within earshot. Everyone's listening. And we must have stood there because we were just sitting there, and they're like, Ari, Jeremy, get up, say something. But you know what they said? What really struck me was they said, say something, mashma'uti, of significance. You remember that? They said, say something of significance.
Because so much of what we say during our military service is of so little significance.
I mean,
so much
but,
fun.
But it's also a real facet of us.
But it opens up
but
the
it
opportunity.
But it opens up the opportunity. So they said, please, because even when we're horsing around, when I have an opportunity to speak to the whole unit, remember the whole battalion was there? It's probably a deep regret that I have that I didn't say more. But you remember the whole battalion was there, and I went in the middle, and I was like, Chayalei Hashem! Remember, I was like, soldiers of God, we have fought together. And then the guy who was actually supposed to speak, the battalion commander, was like, Ari, enough. Right? So, but
we're behind the bonfire.
Right. So we're behind the bonfire. And you spoke just so well. Marvelously.
No, thank you.
It was like I was looking at their eyes. There was not one soldier that was not fixated, piercing on every word that you said. They laughed at them, and they were just so moved. And then I spoke to them, and I was 1,000 times better. No, I'm just kidding. I wasn't. You know, I was actually, sometimes I'm self-conscious because my Hebrew is not totally fluent. I can understand everything, and I can express everything I want to say. It's not always in the right gender and the right grammar. So sometimes I, you know, think twice about speaking. I was like, it doesn't matter. I have something I need to say. I'm going to say it however I need to say it. One of the messages that I said that I actually felt the impact when it landed was I said, you know, when I go around America and I speak to these American Jews, a lot of them are religious Jews, I say to them, listen, my brothers in the Israeli army, because our unit has 99% when we're called up for reserves, 99% of the people show up. And you know, I said, those brothers of mine that volunteered to stay on in the last war, to, after 6 weeks, not to go back to their jobs and their family and the safety of not being in the war, everybody signed this petition. I said, those are truly religious Jews. Not those that are so consumed with, are we checking our broccoli correctly as missiles are falling in on Israel? I'm not saying we shouldn't keep the mitzvot and be concerned about them. Of course we should. But when it's to the exclusion of the fate of the Jewish people and the welfare of the nation of Israel, and we're only focused on our little between us and God thing instead of the entire holistic picture, I said, I told them, you, my friends, are the truly religious Jews. And I felt like I saw in their eyes a spark that was like they were saying to themselves, I knew I was religious. I knew I was religious because they are. Yes, maybe they're not so observant, but these guys are religious. They will fight to the death for Israel and the Jewish people. We're like a lion ready to pounce. It was just a beautiful thing. And the messages that you were sharing also, you know, just Jewish pride and the dream of the Jewish people that we're fulfilling just by breathing air in the morning, waking up out of our beds, we're part of the unfolding redemption.
Yeah, I'll tell you one, the one thing that I said that still sticks with me even until today, I was thinking about it last night as I went to bed, but I was saying, because, you know, there was, we have an Ethiopian guy in our platoon, and we got Russian guys, and we got, you know, Moroccan guys. And I was like, and you, Juventa, your great-great-grandmother was praying that one day you would come home, and that you in Russia, and that you in Morocco, and all of the Jews for thousands of years were,
because our unit represents everybody.
It represents the whole unit, and we are the living answers to all of our parents from all around the world. All of their prayers have been answered through our lives as we're a part of the first resurrected Jewish army in our new country.
You know, Jeremy, that was the last night that we had, so I didn't have that much time to talk to everybody because we were released the next morning. I don't know what kind of feedback you got, but the feedback I got, just about you, what you were saying, they said, you know, I never drank that drink. I don't know if it translates into, but they were like, that's a new thing for me. That is powerful. I've heard speak, that it changed me forever. I mean, people were saying that. It was beautiful.
Wow. I'll tell you, you know, from what all that's going on now, I just feel so hopeful and so excited. And, you know, as I'm saying the special prayer that we say during Hanukkah, I can't help but also thank God for Hanukkah, but also just thank God for what's happening right now in Israel, that he would be Moser Giborim Biad Chalashim, that he would deliver these mighty United Nations into the hands of like a smallish, weak Israel. Rabim biad me'atim, the many in the hands of few, the impure defiled into the hands of the pure, and the evil into the hands of the righteous. And I just like, it's like God is just setting up the stage to deliver us and make the truth known again.
You know, and we always ask ourselves when we have our meetings, for years now, I don't know if you're aware, but within the first 5 minutes, we say, okay, let's take a step back. What is the calling of our generation right now? What does Israel need? What is dynamically, because it changes sometimes. We're always trying to say, what can we do? And when I was thinking, what is the call right now? What should we do? I'm realizing it's not even so much in the media anymore. Right now, I don't feel like it's even in what we say. I feel like it's in what we do. And what are we doing? We are building our headquarters. We're building this beautiful, strong Judean center in the hills of Judea with the whole world condemning us and calling us this, that, and the other thing. How do we need to respond? We don't. We don't even need to. Just build.
Build.
The walking man walks. That's what James Taylor said. Other men stop and talk. The walking man, we just need a walk. We just need to build and continue building. And part of what I've done to really put my faith, I've taken nearly all of my money, and I'm not just talking about my bank account, I'm talking about my savings, everything, and I just want to put it in. You know, that's just, we're putting it totally of ourselves. You're casting your entire lot. Have you put your house on the market yet?
Everything is on the market.
Everything.
Everything is on the line.
We're putting everything into this, because building this in the hills of Judea, this is the front lines. And, you know, I've said to myself, because there are those people that love me in the world that say, Ari, what if it's all destroyed? What if you lose it all? It could happen. That's just a risk I'm willing to take. And if it does happen and I lose it all, Well, who gets the opportunity to sacrifice everything for Hashem and for the Israel? I mean, that's what we're doing here.
You know, it's like on the way to our headquarters, if you drive from Jerusalem, you go past the Herodian. In the Herodian is the summer palace of King Herod, who rebuilt or refurbished the second temple and really made it the most beautiful building. And we pass by these ruins, and it's a huge tourist attraction.
Right.
It's ruins. And people from all over the world go to see the Herodian. They climb up the mountain. They see the ancient ruins. It's like Masada. People go all over Israel to look at these ancient ruins. And then they come just 10 minutes past the Herodian to our center, and it looks ancient, and it looks like it's ruins. But it's like the ruins have been resurrected and taken a life, and it's not looking into the past, but it's looking into the future, that there should be a Torah center that's dedicated to teaching the entire world the Torah, to bring the Torah to all nations, to broadcast it on our network throughout the planet. It's like in the heart of Judea.
Yeah, you know what it makes me think about, just on a sort of a Kabbalistic, abstract, metaphysical level? You know, the every generation we get away from the giving of the Torah, there's more and more distance there. And that light from Sinai diminishes a little bit with every generation that goes. That's why we hold on to the words of our sages and cherish them so much, because they were so much closer to the Sinai experience. But at the same time, while the light of the giving of the Torah is to our backs, we are closer to the light of redemption on our front.
Oh, wow.
And that's a different type of light, a different type of, and I'm feeling it more and more, and I feel like I keep crumbling. I see the magnitude of where we have been placed in the journey of Israel, this redemptive process, and it's so humbling and it's so overwhelming, and I just, sometimes I feel like Jonah. I just want to run away.
You know,
but I'm like, you know what? You know, just take a step forward.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
It's just so special because, you know, we have people that I've just met recently. I mean, I fly to Australia and I can meet these people. I want you to know I've been listening to you and Ari for 7 years. I like met people in New Mexico that have been watching us forever, and they've been supporting us, and then they finally made it to Israel. And I got to bring them to our headquarters. And they're like, this is what we've been hearing about. This is what we've been supporting. And then to like go there with us, it's like all of us together at the Land of Israel Network are building something so marvelous. Some people haven't even seen it yet with their own eyes. But as soon as they come to Israel, it's like we bring them to the center. They're going to be staying there. It's like just a revolution in the heart of the heart of the heart of everything that the world is focusing on. We have something that's like at the heart of it all, and we're a part of the forces of light banishing the forces of darkness.
So that's one message I would say for all of our listeners out there. If you have a trip, upcoming trip, reach out to us. Hopefully we'll answer your emails, because we're so not good at that, but we'll get better. Okay. Reach out to us and come and visit us in the hills of Judea. It will be the highlight. It's that for me, it's the highlight of my life. Every time I go, it's you know what it's like for me? It's like I step into a dream. At the time, it doesn't feel like a dream. It just sort of seems more lucid and spiritual and surreal. But then once I leave and I think back at the time that I was just there an hour ago, there's a dreamlike quality to that place. Is it not?
It really is like a dream. It's like a dream. I feel like sometimes when I get there, I want to take my shoes off. It's just like I'm on holy ground. And, kind of bringing people there to see it for the first time. It's like one of those experiences that people never forget. People never forget. Folks, this is Ari and Jeremy. Happy Hanukkah. If you guys want to support the work at the Land of Israel Network, go to the website. Right on the top, there's a donate button. Click there. With your help, we will bring light to banish the darkness. Happy Hanukkah.
Founded in 1902, World Mizrahi is a global, Torah-driven, community-focused educational organization committed to Jewish identity and destiny. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
Hanukkah light burns so bright.
Hanukkah, Hanukkah, come light the menorah.
Up in my lockers in the air sometimes.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children.
Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation. On behalf of myself and all of the hosts and wonderful staff behind the Land of Israel Network, I want to wish all of you a happy Hanukkah, a joyous festival of lights, and may we here at the Land of Israel Network continue to shine the light of Israel on the world. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening and supporting us.
Have you ever planted a grapevine? What if the grapevine happened to be in the Land of Israel? Not only that, but if you were a Christian planting this grapevine in the mountains of Israel, you would be fulfilling prophecy that Isaiah and Jeremiah foretold more than 3,000 years ago. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to fulfill prophecy on the mountains of Israel by joining us this harvest. Go to Hayuvel.com, that's Hayuvel.com for more information.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4-bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself, and I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.